Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, April the 22nd.
I speak as you speak, for peace, not war. When I say that America must take a firm line with communist leaders until their evil system ceases to threaten the world and threaten the freedom of man and the peace of the world.
That was Barry Goldwater from his 1964 presidential campaign, when his slogan was, "In your heart, you know he's right," but his critics claimed, "In your guts, you know he's nuts." We are going to talk about Barry Goldwater this hour with John Dean. You remember John Dean. He was former White House counsel to Richard Nixon. Well, he's also the co-author of the new book, Pure Goldwater, co-author with Barry Goldwater's son, Barry Goldwater Jr. And we're going to talk about the life and times of Barry Goldwater in Barry Goldwater's own words. A lot of this book derived from journals that Barry Goldwater kept throughout the years. And we'll welcome your questions for John Dean at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Well, we'll talk some about if Barry Goldwater were alive today, would he even recognize the Republican Party of today? Maybe find out what John Dean thinks he'd be thinking about this year's presidential race, and more, whatever else you would like to say or ask about the man who considered the founder or launcher of the modern conservative movement in America. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Well, let me welcome our guest, John Dean, author, columnist, commentator on contemporary politics. John Dean served as White House counsel to President Richard Nixon from 1970 to 73. He was also the star witness of the Watergate prosecution, author of several books, including Conservatives Without Conscience and Worse Than Watergate. He is co-author with Barry Goldwater Jr. of the recently published Pure Goldwater. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, you were roommates with Barry Goldwater Jr. in college, was it?
We've known each other so long, it's ugly.
No, you were, and you had long talked about perhaps collaborating on a book like this.
Well, you know, I saw the publisher put that in there. I think the only thing, as kids, we ever collaborated on, in fact, he and I lived across from each other in Washington when he came back to Congress,
okay,
was where we could find a more attractive lady somewhere.
So not really a lot of talk about a book on his dad.
No, but I thought that was interesting. The publisher came up with that.
All right. Well, now we're getting the true story here. But tell us what this book, though, is based a lot on the writings, the journal that Barry...
What happened? Mm-hmm. I did a book that you may recall called Conservatives Without Conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually started that book with the late senator, who I've known forever. And it was because he and I were talking. He said, "You know, I really am just distressed with the incivility that's become so common in conservatism." And he said, "I don't understand what the hell a religious right is doing in here running the Republican Party. I'd like to get some answers." He was out of the Senate, and he said, "I got time." And he said, "Let's get down to this." And so he said, "One of the things you got to do, and we should do soon, is look at my papers. I've got stuff I don't think people have seen." And unfortunately, his health turned bad. So we dropped the book project, but I never dropped the book. And years later, when I went back and did it, I went and looked at his papers that were down at the Arizona Historical Foundation. And sure enough, I found the threads of this journal that he had mentioned to me, and I got the archives. I said, "Listen, here's what this stuff is. It's portable typed, and in other instances, it's dictated to his personal secretary when electronic dictation came in. It starts in about 38, and it looks like it runs his whole life." So they went through and plucked out all this stuff, and we found it really is a rather complete journal. been misfiled, sometimes in his Phoenix office, sometimes in his Washington office, sometimes in his home office. It was all over the lot. So this is the source of this book. Yes, we use some correspondence to keep a narrative going in places, but I called Barry Jr. I said, come look at this stuff. This is just real pure gold. It's so different than your dad's co-written autobiographies. It's stuff that biographers never found when they went into files. In fact, we did a session here in Washington at the Heritage Foundation with Lee Edwards, who's one of Goldwater's biographers. And he said, you know, I heard that this journal existed, but I couldn't find it. And he said, how'd you guys find it? And I told him the story of how, you know, mm-hmm. Senator tipped me off it did exist. So anyway, that's the source. And then it was a process of whittling down, you know, what to use, what not to use. And we've decided not just all politics, but make it very representative of this man, his learning the process of the Senate, his attitude. And so it's really... I call it a scrapbook, and that's really what it is. It's a scrapbook of this man's life and thought.
Yeah, well, it is. It's interesting, certainly to read. But when you say it's so different than the biographies out there, what makes it different?
It's the tone. It's unfiltered. It's just Mo, my wife, knew the senator well. She said, you know, I thumbed through your other books on the senator. And they didn't get my interest. But he said, but when I read this, I heard his voice. Mm-hmm. It's the cadence. It's the style. It's the tone. It really is his voice.
Mm-hmm. Well, just give us the short course. Who was Barry Goldwater?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was both icon and, we think, exemplar. Mm-hmm. He's somebody who. He dropped out of college when his father died when his freshman year to come back and run the family department store in Phoenix, and he takes the store, which is doing well, into doing great. He builds the store up to one of the most successful enterprises in Arizona. Along the way, he says, you know, I can't be critical of the Phoenix government if I don't get to be part of it. So he ran for city council so he could, not thinking he would necessarily win, but at least he had a basis he could criticize the city council. So he succeeds. That's where politics starts. Then he's somebody who loves, I think, every stone, every mountain, every nook in the state of Arizona, as well as the Native Americans and the people of Arizona. So he knows his state like the palm of his hand, I mean, as well as his family. He is, to me, in a sense, the ideal of what I think when our founders decided on representative government, the kind of people they wanted to have represent the various states in the Union. He actually is born in a state that wasn't part of the Union at the time. Mm-hmm. Arizona was not in the Union when in fact, he was a ring bearer in the first wedding after the state became part of the United States. Knows everybody in Arizona from his exploits of going down the Colorado River and taking a film around and showing the people of Arizona. He loves the state of Arizona and was the last person in the world that ever wanted to be president. But we found fascinating material about when he first goes back to Washington and realizes the responsibility of being a member of the Senate. Mm-hmm. This is where he really does what he would have done if he'd gone to college. He gets books, he reads, he becomes a real student of philosophy and government. He can cite Locke, he can cite Hobbes and Mills and the Federalist Papers, almost from memory, because he dives into these. So he's not an uneducated man. As after his first term in the Senate, he's well-read. And one of the things that always annoyed me, and I was glad when Lee Edwards, who is one of his biographers, said this at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, that he was stunned to find that Goldwater was as knowledgeable and as learned as he really is and was. So that's the man, and mm-hmm. he doesn't want to run for president in 64. He'd planned to run for president against Kennedy because he thought Kennedy was gutless. And he told Kennedy, Kennedy was a close friend of his, but he said, you know, you just don't know how to run the military, which is my background, and you're going to let these missiles in Cuba be the end of our last chapter. So they had a very interesting idea once of running together in a Lincoln Douglas-style really? Debate and travel around the country in an airplane and stop at various major cities and debate, get back on the plane, and go to the next city. It would have really changed presidential politics had they ever done it.
Yeah.
And when Kennedy is assassinated, Goldwater knows he can never get elected. He knows nobody other. Americans just aren't going to select three presidents in 4 years. So, but he does it because of the young people who are behind the movement he has started.
And he has started. He is considered the founder of the modern conservative movement.
He is, and he would be horrified by it today. He wouldn't recognize it. If you look at Goldwater's positions, he's well left of center today.
Mm-hmm.
He's pro-choice. He is somebody who is and was long before Roe v. Wade. He is somebody who believes that spending has been a consistent thing. He wouldn't understand Republican spending. He would look upon the last Republican or the 6 years of the Bush administration, the Republican-controlled Congress, as some of the worst sins the Democrats ever committed, if not worse, because they had always promised they would be fiscally responsible. Issues like defense, he's been pretty consistent on. He would be opposed to preemptive war that Bush and Cheney have sold us. He believed in the strong defense was the best offense, so nobody would. But he wouldn't police the world to look for wars, I'll assure you, and get us into something like Iraq. In Vietnam, he thought Johnson was foolish the way he ran the war in Vietnam, and he would find we were beyond folly now in Iraq. So he would be very outspoken as well about what's going on.
Yeah.
While he was a party man, he certainly didn't remain silent on his views.
We're going to take
a long thumbnail for you.
That was a great short course in Barry Goldwater, talking about Barry Goldwater with John Dean, who is co-author of the book Pure Goldwater. And we welcome your questions for John Dean, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned on this Earth Day, Tuesday, April the 22nd, founded by Wisconsin's own Gaylord Nelson some 38 years ago today. Lots of Earth Day programming coming up. Kathleen Dunn and her guest will discuss ways to keep the environment healthy after 10 o'clock. Larry Mueller and his guests talking about birds and conservation after 11 o'clock. Talk of the Nation will also do some Earth Day related programming, as will Ben Marins after 5 o'clock. 50 Ways to Save the Planet. That's all coming up here on the Ideas Network on this Earth Day. Right now, talking with John Dean about Barry Goldwater. John Dean and Barry Goldwater Jr. are the co-authors of the recently published book about Barry Goldwater Sr. called Pure Goldwater. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And our first caller, since we're just talking about Earth Day and the environment, let's bring on Dennis in Beloit. Hi, Dennis, you're on the air.
Thank you. Very nice program. Let me mention, I was never a Goldwater supporter. However, I respected his candor, and particularly in the area, it occurs to me that many years before he died, he said that one of the worst votes he ever voted for was the Glen Canyon Dam on the Colorado River. And in a way, I feel that his candor in that regard actually slowed further damming that had been projected for the Colorado River. And I wonder if he would today, how he would handle the water resource situation, because it's so obvious that...
Good question. Good question.
We're outliving our resources. We have the Great Lakes packed here, and anyone that goes to Las Vegas can see the usage of water. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy activities that relate to water as well, but having had the opportunity of going down the Grand Canyon and seeing Lake Powell, and it's fallen 80 feet, what comments does Mr. Dean have in that regard?
Yeah, good. There's a good bit of material in the journal that we reproduced about Goldwater and natural resources. His love of the state of Arizona. He's with the, I think he's the something like the 17th person to ever go down the Colorado in a flatboat. And there's a picture of him that one of his son took in his one of his later flatboat trips. He loved the Colorado. He loved its natural resources. He was a not only a conservationist, he was an environmentalist throughout his life. He, as you would acknowledge, that he made some bad votes on that, and I think he would have unrolled those and indeed been a very outspoken critic of some of the things that have been done with our natural resources. In fact, his wife's and his ashes are spread over the Grand Canyon. When that was one of his wishes, and while I'm not sure it's legal,
it's there.
he did enough for the canyon in his lifetime, and when he was in Congress and in the Senate, that I think that the canyon's probably happy to have him spend eternity there. So yes, it's a good question. We sprinkled throughout the journal his interest in the great outdoors, and I think he made a total of I don't know, like maybe 8 or 9 runs down the Colorado. He did it with his sons, did it with his grandchildren. Wonderful picture of he and his 3 sons at the Colorado. Had some remarkable experiences there. So you'll enjoy this part of the book and his love of what apparently is your love, too.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. Daniel in Rice Lake is with us now. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. Goldwater led a delegation of GOP leaders to the White House, which told Nixon that he had few supporters left in Congress and told Nixon that he would be impeached. Previous to Goldwater's bold move, the Imperial President Nixon fought against impeachment. Was Goldwater motivated by high ideal, the defense of the Constitution, or was his chief motivation the partisan political defense of the Republican Party?
Well, you'll find a good bit, you know, one of the most striking things we discovered was his journal entries, the vast and greatest amount of the material related to Nixon and Watergate.
Yeah, you're familiar with that stuff.
And he goes all the way back to first meeting Nixon in 53 when he's elected in 52 to the Senate and has this, excuse me, very complex relationship with Nixon. The story you're talking about, he covers in some detail. He says that his colleagues decided he was the one who should go down and tell Nixon, in his words, that he'd bought the farm and it was time to leave. He says that he was originally going to take John Stennis with him, and then they decided the best thing to do would be take the Republican leader of the Congress, both the House and the Senate, U. Scott and John Rhodes, down. And he records in some detail this session. And he thinks that, he's so disgusted with Nixon at this time and his behavior and his inability. In fact, another very interesting thing, while he typically made his journal entries and communications, through a dictating machine, he one night types out by hand on his portable typewriter a letter to Nixon telling him to get his act together, start acting like the President of the United States, tell the people what the hell you're doing and why you're doing it, and try to see if you can get this thing behind you. So he has very deep feelings about the way the Constitution works, the way the system works, the way he's hurting the party. So all of those issues are in his head. He doesn't come into it late. The daughter of his longtime friend, Bill and Sally Quinn, a general. They have a daughter by name of Sally, or Betty Quinn has a daughter named Sally, is about to marry Ben Bradley, who is the editor of the Washington Post. And he says, I go to Ben Bradley and say, Ben, is this thing really as serious, or is it just politics? And Ben says, Barry, it's serious. And that's when he gets into it and starts to take action. So there's a lot of material on this, and you'll see that the integrity of this man. The other thing that's very, very interesting that not even his family knew, Nixon offers him an ambassadorship during the height of Watergate, which Goldwater would have loved. But he doesn't let that plum stand in the road of withdrawing his defense of Nixon. That's one of the reasons we thought this book was important. It showed that politicians can have real integrity and be people of true principle, and while this is not a worship of the man, because it's all in his own words and is a private journal, I don't think he ever thought it would be published. It just shows his thinking, and if we only had more people in public office who thought this way, where you put the Constitution and the American people first and your own career and interest in power second, we'd be a lot better country.
Yeah. Now there's a picture in the book. It says the caption of the picture has Barry Goldwater Senior and Junior looking at you, and it says Goldwater Junior and Senior spellbound by speaker.
That. I slipped that.
That was very funny.
I slipped that little comment on there without identifying myself.
But I thought, do you recall what that was all about?
Yes, I was giving a speech, and the senator and Barry Jr. were there. So I put I'm at the podium, and they're looking over at me intently. So I think the comment I put is Barry Jr. and Senior spellbound by speaker, because it's a much younger me. Obviously, it's I'm probably in my late 20s, early 30s. I'm at the Department of Justice, and. So you have a sharp eye.
Well, it was quite funny.
All those decades ago,
I remember. Did Barry Goldwater talk about you in his journals?
He does. Mm-hmm. He gives an interview when he finally breaks rank and starts firing some missiles down towards the White House. He uses the press, and he had. Talked to me about after Watergate. He said, you know, is there anything to this? Was Nixon involved in that damn break-in? And I told him then exactly what I would tell him today, that there was absolutely no knowledge that anybody in the White House knew anything about it. I didn't tell him anything about the cover-up because he didn't ask, and two, I never wanted to do anything to compromise him. There was a lot more we had later. When I broke rank and left the White House, again, without compromising the senator, I went to him because while the counsel's office has incidental dealings with the issues of national security, we don't do the counsel office isn't day to day involved. And I wanted to make sure that my testimony wasn't going to do any harm to national security. So I, through Barry Jr., the senator and I met over at his house one Sunday morning. I began telling him, you know, some of the things I wanted to do, and I'll never remember. He said, hold on a minute, John. Mm-hmm. He said, Barry, he shouted up to Barry, who was not there the whole time. He said, bring me an old crow. Mm-hmm. So he said, I need a shot to hear this stuff. And I just asked him, I said, you know, I'm going to blow the president out of the water. And Barry Sr. said to me, listen, Nixon's that SOB's always been a liar. You just go ahead and go right in there and blow him out of the water. It's not going to hurt national security. It may help it.
Yeah. Well, let's go. Thanks, Daniel. Greg in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Greg.
Yes, I grew up in Barry Goldwater's neighborhood. Went up to his house before they put the fence up. Was at his house when he announced for president. He spoke at our political science club in high school. So I've been following him for a long time. And it seems to me that Barry Goldwater, William F. Buckley, Ronald Reagan have been, in effect, Pied Pipers that have led us to this current Bush administration and the anti-government attitudes that have gotten us into the current mess that we're in.
Well, I don't know if they were Pied Pipers. They were leaders who as I say, as I have said many times, Goldwater and to a degree Reagan wouldn't recognize what has happened to conservatism, and it's probably on its last legs now. While there are still some, Goldwater actually in the journals you'll see calls the conservatives and their attitude radicals, and that's exactly what they are. When, for example, he puts a suggests you put a moderate on the Supreme Court, and with Sandra Day O'Connor, I happen to be responsible for Rehnquist, for which I've apologized. When Jerry Falwell came out and said, well, you know, all good Christians should oppose this, Goldwater's reaction was, all good Christians should kick Jerry Falwell in the ass. he didn't buy into all this radical business, and he thought, you needed a natural yin and yang, a balance, that not either party had the right answer. And I didn't know until we started this book, and Barry Jr. and I have done some joint appearances. He told me how his dad became a Republican, and then we learned about a conservative. That the Goldwaters, who have been in the state of Arizona since since the first white settlers arrived there, with his great 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 grandfather. They were all Democrats. They were very responsible and always had been in. One had been a mayor and a Prescott. Another one had been in the state legislature, and they were all Democrats. And they had been supporters of Carl Hayden. But when the department store, when both Barry Sr. and his brother Bob really had to get the department store up and running, as Bob had stayed at Stanford and graduated and then came back to help run the store, they decided they needed to be on both sides of the aisle politically for customers. They flipped a coin as to who was going to become the Republican, and they flipped, and Barry lost, and he became the Republican. So that's when he began learning about republicanism, and then he takes what he feels is the excesses of the New Deal that are so beginning to hurt business people, and that's where you see the foundations of his conservative philosophy. And I think anybody knows that too much of anything is a bad thing, that this country works best as being going down the center, and Goldwater is basically center right in his early days. Now he is he's center left, if not left, in his views, because the party left him and went so far right.
Mm-hmm. Greg,
well, he laid the groundwork, whether purposefully or inadvertently, for this mess, along with the knee-jerk anti-government people like Buckley, like Reagan. And so look where it's led us. I mean, results matter here. And I think,
well, we don't always know our results, do we? But if there's one thing you will understand, and if you look at the book, is he did it with good heart. Mm-hmm. He did it with every bit of foresight he could put into it, because the other route was to go potentially to socialism, and I don't think we want to go there either.
Yeah, thank you, Greg Lee in Lake Mills. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joey.
Good morning. Good
morning, John. It's a pleasure to hear a reinforcement of something that I believed in, and I describe. I'm a progressive for sure, and I describe myself when speaking into other groups and things as a Goldwater Republican.
As do I.
You know, he was,
and people don't understand that anymore. They think, well, that they think you're a conservative, and they don't know that you're center left.
Yeah, they certainly don't, and unless you lived through it, you really don't know the perspective very well. Your book probably will help that, but it was a political awakening for me when Goldwater came along, and although I came from at the time of an extremely conservative town, Rockford, Illinois. He just never tipped or jingled my BS detector. Here was a guy that just he just said
probably couldn't do it. He was too candid.
One thing I remember from then that was a piece of evidence that was endearing is that Goldwater traveled with very few speech makers, and he said the same thing in Alabama that he would have said in Montana.
Very much true.
And that really was, boy, because I knew that at the time Johnson was, the Democratic message at that time wasn't, you know, it jingled the BS detector.
Thank you very much, Lee. I want to play this pretty famous clip from Barry Goldwater during the 64 presidential campaign. I think he said
that... The extremism clip.
Yeah, hold on. And
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Yeah. I think I did read, though, that he was handed that as a speechwriter did give him that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And he was in the journal, I correct, where he got that. He got it from a professor at Claremont, who's now at Claremont, by the name of Harry Jaffe, who in turn had taken it from Cicero. And one of his other later speechwriters took credit for it. But he took a lot of heat for that because people never really listened to what he was saying and analyzed the phrase and said, ah, this guy's an extremist, which he was anything but. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that I discovered along the way, Joy, is that I found the only thing following the 64 campaign that Goldwater was willing to not let just pass as politics was when he was attacked as being psychologically unfit to be the president of the United States. A magazine called Fact Magazine came out, purportedly had polled psychiatrists in the United States and made this long-distance analysis of him. So he, New York Times versus Sullivan, had recently been handed down by the Supreme Court, making it very difficult for a public figure to bring a defamation lawsuit. And the senator said, well, you know, they attacked me in a way, in the most vicious way they could. They called me a Hitler figure. They called me a warmonger. They called me effeminate because I'd worked in a department store. I mean, you just name it. This magazine had laid it out. He said, I'm just not going to give them a pass, and I'm going to go after them. He got one of the best lawyers in Washington, a guy named Roger Robb, who later was a distinguished federal judge. And they went after him. And so I was finally able to locate in the archives in St. Louis, is where the full trial is, his testimony at that trial. It runs about 150,000 words, so I only used a little bit of it that is, I think, pure Goldwater under oath, that explains a lot of his feelings about extremism and the way he had talked to Eisenhower right after making this remark to explain to Eisenhower what it meant. So I do address that in the book.
Yeah. Talking with John Dean, and the book is Pure Goldwater. John Dean and Barry Goldwater Jr., co-authors of this recently published book about Barry Goldwater. We welcome your thoughts, your questions for John Dean about Barry Goldwater, considered the founder of the modern conservative movement in America. And John Dean says Barry Goldwater wouldn't recognize the Republican Party or the conservatives today. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen's guest after 9 suggests that children who come of age on antidepressants may be seriously affecting their psychological development and core identity. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking with John Dean. John Dean, author, columnist, commentator on contemporary politics, served as White House counsel to President Richard Nixon from 1970 to 73, star witness of the Watergate prosecution, author of many, many books, his latest, Pure Goldwater, about Senator Barry Goldwater, a presidential candidate, Barry Goldwater. We welcome your participation at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I was a tot when Barry Goldwater ran for president in 64. My dad, big, big Barry Goldwater supporter. And I remember all those fights over in your heart, you know he's right, versus in your guts, you know he's nuts. How did you view all that?
Well, knowing the senator as I did, I didn't recognize what Lyndon Johnson and the campaign did to him, this whole business about being a nuclear madman just didn't fit with anything I knew about the man. I was in law school at the time. And his son, Barry Jr., had asked me if I would join the campaign. He said, we really need somebody who can control the family schedule, and the only person we think of that we trust enough to do that is you. And I'm in law school, and I said, Barry, I really can't drop out of law school at this point. I'm working, I'm going to school, and you know, I'm going to vote for your dad, but I just can't drop out. He said, well, that's probably smart, because we don't think we're going to win.
Yeah.
So, that's where I was. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, the Daisy ad was one that when I didn't realize this until I was looked at your book that Bill Moyers had something to do with that Daisy ad.
He did, and I put that in there. Mm-hmm. And I Bill's schedule won't permit him to deal with it right away, but this summer I think we're going to sit down with Bill, because I can understand that Bill being involved in you know, helping Lyndon Johnson, and Bill's a very bright guy and knew the media, but for some reason he, for many years, refused to talk to the senator about that. And the senator tried to clean all this up and get all this cleared up, you know, in the years following the 64 campaign. Bill Moyers did help his granddaughter, the senator's granddaughter, Cece, do a documentary for HBO that she started on a number of years ago, and we gave her some of the material we had found for the documentary. I actually participated on camera in that, and Moyers was very helpful in that. So I think that's something he will take care of and give us his mm-hmm. side of that story before too much longer, now that this book is out.
Lots of callers. John in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a memory of Senator Goldwater saying something to the effect that I've been in the Senate for X number of years and I finally did something worthwhile.
Well, I'll tell you what that was.
Does Mr. Dean know what that refers to?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's called Goldwater-Nichols. It was the reorganization of the Department of Defense. It only somebody with Goldwater's gravitas could have gotten that through the Senate, through all the military-industrial complex that was fighting it, the dire need to reorganize the operations of the Pentagon so the Joint Chiefs of Staff had some real power to operate for all the diverse services. He was offended, for example, that every branch of the service had its own Air Force. He said, it's just silly. We need to have one Air Force and not have everybody else. At one point, there's a conversation where he's talking with Nixon about the fact that the Army actually has a larger Air Force than does the Air Force itself. So this has all been cleaned up, and we today operate under the Goldwater-Nichols reorganization plan. And he did feel that did cap his career, and really felt it was worth the two terms he didn't want to run, which were the last two, staying to get that accomplished.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks very much, John, for the call. We go now to Jake in Menasha. Hello.
Yes. I just wanted to ask Mr. Dean, in his opinion, do the labels Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative really mean anything these days?
I don't think they mean much. I don't understand them. In one of my prior books, it was very laborious to go through and explain what a conservative is and how that fits into Republican politics. They're becoming less meaningful in one sense, in that they're certainly not big tent parties anymore. They have become skewed to the right and to the left. The activists on both ends are making all the noise. You look at the average American, and you look at the polling, and we're like a big bell, and most of the people fall in the middle, and they're centrists, and then you hear the noisemakers on the two sides. So they mean less and less. What's encouraging, and I think this is the most exciting primary, I think the fact that we might have a woman nominee or a African-American nominee on the Democratic Party side is the most exciting political story of my lifetime by far.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that we're actually making some progress. As you'll find in this book, Barry Goldwater helped McCain get mm-hmm. his seat when he left, but that soured. And I'm not I'm Barry Jr., and I have had some debates about where his dad would come down on who should be the next president.
I was just going to ask you that. So do you think that he would not necessarily be out there campaigning for John McCain?
I have a feeling that could be the case. He liked McCain's father, who he knew well, Admiral Jack McCain. Actually, mm-hmm. It's John McCain, the same as his son, but he went by the name Jack McCain. And I read in looking at that correspondence closely that Jack McCain helped his son get that the senator's attention to help him raise some money to get that seat. But once he becomes senator, Barry Goldwater becomes deeply disappointed. He doesn't understand the state of Arizona. He's something of a carpetbagger. He doesn't like all of his politics. And so I particularly when he got involved in the Keating Five, I put some correspondence in there where the senator has to pull John McCain up short because he's abusing and misusing his name for his advantage and not to the advantage of Barry Goldwater. A very interesting phenomena happened, which I did not include in the book because this is pure Goldwater, but I found a remarkable amount of correspondence between the Clintons and Senator Goldwater. What happens is Bill Clinton knows that his wife was a Goldwater girl, that the senator is the one who interested her mm-hmm. first in politics. So for a surprise birthday party, I think it was probably her 40th or maybe her 50th, no, probably her 40th birthday party, he calls the senator. The White House operators can find anybody,
mm-hmm.
and the president can find anybody, and asks the senator if he will indeed make a surprise call to a surprise party for Hillary. And he does so, and it starts this relationship. And Bill Clinton visits Barry a couple times when he was hospitalized in his retirement years, and does even later, Hillary shows up in a surprise visit when she's in Arizona. As surprising as you can be when you have a phalanx of Secret Service agents that have to go there first. So there was, and the Clintons were looking for nothing. They were just fascinated with this man and his, you know, his blunt candor, his honesty, his political wisdom. I'm not so sure where he would come out. And I think he would have great respect for a Barack Obama. I personally have no horse in this race. I've dropped partisan politics long mm-hmm. ago so I can be an honest commentator about it. But I think he'd be fascinated because he was very progressive on issues of race. He's, as a member of city council, he desegregates the theaters, the airport, everything. Years earlier, he had done so with his department store. When he comes back from World War II, long before Truman integrates the military, he does so with the Arizona National Guard. The only vote that he ever got any heat for, he votes for all the civil rights bills, excepting the 64 public accommodation section, where a lawyer from Phoenix by the name of Bill Rehnquist told him it was unconstitutional, and another lawyer from Yale by the name of Robert Bork confirmed that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's the other way around. But I was doing some research for this program, and I was bopping around the internet, and I found Ron Paul people using Barry Goldwater clips to sort of vote for Ron Paul. He's like Barry Goldwater.
Well, Barry Jr. Mm-hmm. actually looked over the field, and he certainly didn't look to McCain as somebody his father would particularly be happy his son was supporting, and he thought that Ron Paul's candor, while he might not buy everything Ron Paul is recommending, but his candor and mm-hmm. his libertarian approach would certainly have had a great appeal to the senator.
Yeah. Let's go now to Mason in Manitowoc. Hi, Mason. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me. I'd like to say that I think I'm probably too young to be a proper supporter of Barry Goldwater when he was around. But I really respect the ideals and where he comes from. I'm curious if there's any way, any room in Washington or America today in American politics for the Barry Goldwater view of politics.
Well, I certainly think so, and that's one of the reasons we did this book. We think here's a man who decided and studied the whole spectrum at the time that he knew it, looked back to the 19th century and found that there were ways and behavior standards that elected officials were expected to honor and respect and to carry to Washington. He did so. He did so throughout the 20th century. We think that that very basic material is equally as applicable to the 21st century. So we've tried to give the picture of the man who is just like all of us, and he has interests that are non-political, and he loves people. He loves his country. He's patriotic. And we think these are pretty basic and fundamental ideas that are worth sharing from a man who did, when it was all said and done, have respect of as many Democrats as he did Republicans. For example, I looked at the Senate floor the day he passed away, and one of the most liberal members, Senator Wellstone, who before had passed away shortly thereafter himself, had written a book called The Conscience of a Liberal. And he comes to the Senate floor, and he says, you know, there's probably not a lot of difference between the right and the left, but he said there is a difference in the kind of people who are politicians, and integrity is the bottom line. And this man is the icon for, if not the best example we can have, of that kind of integrity.
Yeah. That's a very refreshing answer, and it's good to hear. Do you think it would be better to have more money in campaigning or less money?
Less. He was very opposed to that. To cut to the bottom line, he suggested, particularly at presidential races, they be cut shorter, like Great Britain. That way you can't spend the kind of money that's being spent. I think he'd be horrified at what's going on right now with the money that's being spent. And so if you shorten, and you can do this by law without running into the First Amendment, the same kind of problems, although he was prepared to amend the Constitution if necessary, because he felt money was corrupting democracy.
We will leave it there. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
John Dean, who, along with Barry Goldwater Jr., are the co-authors of the book Pure Goldwater, which is based largely on all of the writings of Barry Goldwater Sr., journals and diaries that the senior Goldwater kept. We thank John Dean for being with us. John Dean, of course, author, columnist, commentator. He was White House counsel to President Richard Nixon and was the star witness of the Watergate prosecution. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour. Thanks to Christina Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. Hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. And tomorrow at this time, we'll likely be talking presidential politics with the results of today's Pennsylvania primary. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.